I want to thank the organizer for inviting me here to give the talk. So I'm going to talk about some of the treatment planning that relates to other talks that you have heard of yesterday. So I guess just to give you some idea, my educational background is mathematics and computer science, and most of the research focus on mathematical modeling, large-scale optimization, and scientific computing. So some of the research that I've been doing relate to disease prediction and early diagnosis and optimal treatment design and also drug delivery. And how do we look at the outcome, and also in the logistics side, we look at the efficiency of healthcare delivery. So for this talk, I will focus on the optimal therapeutic design, especially in the radiation therapy part. So radiation in the U.S., at least like, what we are looking at is that half of the cancer patients will receive radiation therapy at some time during the treatment, whether it is a definitive treatment or an adjuvant treatment along with hormone therapy and also surgery. So in the first topic that I have worked on in radiation therapy relates to the implantation of radioactive seeds inside the body. So that's what we call the brachytherapy. Here the radiation source actually is the tiny little seeds, and you actually put it inside the cancer area. And it could be temporary, like in a breast cancer area, or it could be permanent in the prostate cancer. So we work with Memorial Sloan on designing optimal treatment design, tracking the tumor shrinkage and how the seeds displayed after it's been placed in the body, and also incorporating some of the biological imaging information within the treatment. So that's pretty exciting work, and that has been already for 10 years. And this one results in the improvement of tumor control probability from 65% to 95%. So we had a lot of good success there. So for this talk, I'm going to focus on external beam radiation. And this is the work that I've been working on with Emory University, where I am a faculty member, and also with Washington University and Harvard University. So for this one, the radiation actually comes out from the outside. So it is related to like two of the talks that you have heard of yesterday. So just to remind you, as I'm sure you have seen some of these pictures in terms of how the radiation is done. So basically this is the what we call the linear accelerator. That is the radiation that comes down to the patient. So you see 360 degrees freedom to move this gantry angle. That's what we call it. And if you look up here on the beam, this is actually the very thick metal, and each of these beams can be shaped into different shapes. So as it comes down to the patient, then you will see that the beam is being shaped in different directions. So when we look at intensity modulation, it's different from traditional intensity. It's that if you look up there, the beams come down, it's uniform. That's what the conventional radiation. In intensity modulation, it's that if you look up, in fact, all of these beams, they are actually discretized into little beamlets. So they are very tiny little beamlets. And the power of this is that because you can actually really deliver a very tiny little beam to it, you can actually paint the tumor, so you get really high accuracy of tumor dose. On the other hand, you can imagine, if you just look at the from the mathematics point of view, so you have a very sophisticated system, and it actually really begs for a very sophisticated optimization engine or decision engine to actually find a plan. So this is the this is again the variables of how do you determine the directions of the beams, and once you have directions of the beams, how do you determine each of these little beamlets inside the beam, how much to turn on and off. And if you look at it, this is a prostate case, and that's five beams here. The intensity itself is actually represented by the color code. So you can see that these are five beams, and the intersection of this, that's the whole concept, is the intersection is what you want it to be targeted totally on the tumor. And then everything outside you would like to spare as much as possible. I think we don't need to understand so much of the biology part to know that you really would like to be able to deliver as much dose to the tumor and as little dose to the normal tissue. Okay, that's the critical part. So if you look at a plan, this is a head and neck case. And there are nine beams here. So if you look at all these beams, like you can see, like these are the intensity different, right? The shape of it is produced by that collimator, those thick metal. So this is what we are targeting. This is the math problem. It is only part of the problem, okay? So just that gives you some idea is that intensity modulator is a lot more, it's a lot larger scales than really the conventional one. And it is actually a sequence of steps that we have to follow in terms of like how do we design plan. And of course, the dose actually has to be delivered to the PTV. PTV is the planning target volume. It consists of the tumor as well as the margin of interest that the clinician outlined. So there's a lot of also, as IMRT actually comes out, there is a problem with organ motion. As the patient actually is breathing, then there is a problem with how the dose should be delivered, because IMRT actually can precisely deliver the dose to the edge of the tumor. So you can imagine if the tumor actually moves, that means you're actually delivered somewhere else, right? Whereas in the old days, you cannot be so precise. And organ motion was not an issue in conventional radiation therapy. So to give you an idea, like, because there are many mathematicians here and you might be interested in like to tackle other parts of this problem. So basically there is the imaging, this is the CT image or MRI image of the tumor area, region of interest, and there is delineation of this target volume. Now this is a very hard problem here, it's because at the moment it's done by hand, by the clinician. And then there is the selection of beam angles, right? This is a combinatorial problem. Once you select the beam angles, you generate the dose for each of these beams. Then you calculate the optimization problem is to calculate all these beam profiles for the little beamlets. And after you determine that, then you have to determine how do you open and close these metal bars in order to deliver. So there's many different problems. So these are the areas that you can do the imaging, and some of the talks that we heard of yesterday relates to the challenge that we are facing on imaging. And then there's the automatic segmentation. Now this is like either the future or the present. This is really difficult to do. And this is continuously to be a challenge, because it is really hard to actually eliminate the tumor area versus the normal tissue. And if you ask two clinicians to look at the same film, they do not agree. And if you've got 10, none of them agree. So maybe just keep arguing about where the tumor is. So it is a big challenge. If you can actually do automation, that means you can actually really help them to identify where is the tumor region. And then there's the lead sequencing. We can actually do very fast lead sequencing. Once we have the solution here, we can actually deliver it. And this is, again, a combinatorial problem. How many segments do you want? And so there are limitations of it. For this talk, I'm going to focus on these two areas. So that's basically this. These are the areas that I'm going to mention. So essentially, if we look at it, IMRT is based on the use of optimized non-uniform radiation beam intensity. There is not a possibility that if you don't have a solution engine, you really cannot deliver, right? Because you cannot just use a human to use a manual, to deliver a manual plan, because that's not possible. So each of these beams, again, contains several thousands of beamlets with various intensity, and the calculation is actually performed in sequence of steps, and these steps, of course, can be coupled. And that's basically, you can see all this optimization going on. Then on top of that, we have to deal with target uncertainties, organ motions that arise during the treatment itself. So the size of the problem. So I'm going to focus on, like, part of the talk will focus on like the mathematics side. If we start thinking about how hard is this problem, how large size we are dealing with. So we have the number of candidate beams here. So you can represent this using 0-1 variables. So if it is 1, it means the beam should be on, right? If the solution comes back, that beam is 1, then that beam should be selected, 0 otherwise. So that's the natural combinatorial problem. But many of us know that if you only are just going to optimize on the beam angles, you get 360 beams, directions, possibility. If we don't think about the point size and all this fraction, okay, just think about one at a time increment. And then if you have to choose, the final plan usually consists of 5 to 7 beams. This is a combinatorial problem, right? Just the beam angle itself is very difficult to actually solve these problems. Then there's the couch angles. How do you place the patient, and you can actually rotate 275 degrees. Actually, you can actually rotate really 360 degrees, but at least the patient couch angles. Then there's the size of the collimators. That means the beamlets that I mentioned. It could be 5 millimeter, it could be 5 millimeter by 5 millimeter, or 1 cm by 1 cm. That's the energy. There are two types of energies we can select. That's the isocenters. That means when you actually have the intersection of these, all these beams, when they come down, how many of the intersections do you want? So ideally, you would want how many? Like if you have a spherical target, you just need one, right? Maybe that's the best. But you have irregular shape in terms of the tumor. So in brain tumor patients, we would like to be able to cover it as well as possible. We can use up to 5. But if you have many isocenters, that means you're going to cause normal tissue complications. So when it is in other parts of the body, we only have one. That means if you actually have the tumor, we only want the intersection of all these beams to be in exactly one spot. And so it is a challenge. It's how, where do you select this spot, right? And then that's the beam intensity. That's a continuous variable that we actually use to represent each of them. So the constraints is that there is a planning target volume. This is where the individual's tumor lies, as well as the surrounding margin. The organs of risk is everything surrounding it that is critical. For example, the socket, the eye socket, the ear, the everything that is critical has to be included, and also the normal tissue. There's the discretization that will represent this. Now, one of the things is that you can imagine this type of, I can give you an example. For example, in a prostate cancer case, we have the discretization for the prostate itself has about 20,000 points. So it is pretty intense in terms of just the number of points that you're representing, not to mention about all the organs surrounding that. Now, the critical part here is that we cannot miss the organs outside, because we have to make sure that those little beamlets don't just put little high dose around the normal tissue, right? So we have to do that. There are clinical constraints, I will mention that, and estimation of the dose calculation. And then the last two part is, where are these voxels, each of these points inside the patient body? Is it in the tumor or is it in the normal tissue? So the focus of this talk, we are going to talk about, like I will mention about the modeling and also the optimization that we design for IMRT treatment, especially on beam angle optimization and fluent snap optimization. How do you do it in one step? So that's the first one. And then I will mention about how do you actually handle systematic uncertainties as you actually treat the patient. So some of the goals. Now, I mentioned that this is like some goals, because every clinician as well as every individual patient is going to have different type of objectives in terms of getting the tumor. So one of the things is we want to make sure 95% of the tumor is being covered, so that's the dose coverage. And we want to make sure that the, really, if you remember that red picture, the one about the prostate, so you want the red to be as tight as possible to in the tumor. That means you want the highest dose to confine to the tumor, and then you want everything else to be really low dose, right? So you want the tightness of that, and that's what we call the conformity of that, like controlling the dose within the tumor region. If we don't cover enough dose in the tumor, then there could be recurrence of the tumor cells, and that is not good. And a lot of times, patients actually died when they don't have the correct treatment in the first round, and then they do the second round of correction, and there is complication to that. And in terms of like radiation, of course, is that if we are going to treat the prostate, one of the things we have to be really careful is that the prostate cancer is slow growing. But if the radiation actually touch the bladder or touch the rectum, those area, the tumor area, if we actually get burned, the tissue, the tumor actually grows extremely fast. Right, so that's the patients actually die because of complication of that. So other objectives, we want to make sure we want to minimize the total dose to the critical structures. And there are many different objectives we need to worry about. So from the optimization point of view, I'll just give you some idea, like for those of you that are mathematicians, is that there's the linear and non-linear convex functions, that these type of problems, optimization problems, there exist polynomial time algorithms for that. And then there's the NP-hard, the class of NP-hard optimization problems that consist of the non-convex problems, the discrete optimization problems. Then, of course, on top of that, there's the deterministic side and the probabilistic side, right? So you're facing different types of difficulty in terms of these problems. Then the next step is exactly what type of tools should you use in terms of solving these problems and model them realistically. So in some of these cases, if you use the convex, focusing on those problems that can be solved using polynomial time algorithms, we can actually really think about like the simplex method, gradient method, and Newton type approach. And then if you look at the NP-hard problem, it becomes a lot more difficult to handle. Just think about the quadratic programming, constrained quadratic programming. A lot of the challenge there is not that you cannot solve it. You have very few iterations, but each iteration takes a lot of time. And I will mention about the computational effort there. Now, how hard are you willing to work on? Then leads to the fact that how realistic can you actually build a model and how useful they are in the clinical setting. If you restrict yourself to linear and nonlinear case that are convex, you can actually model the dose space. That means you can restrict for this particular box, so what is the lower bound, what is the upper bound, right? So that's, those are linear constraints. You can determine the fluent intensity. You can also put the dose volume histogram as an objective inside the objective function and try to minimize that. That's just the least square approach. Then if you go to the next step, is now you want to actually model DVH, and I will mention that in the next slide. You want to model the coverage, you want to model like the beam orientations, right, 0 or 1. You cannot stay in the continuous region anymore. Now you move out to the discrete part. Then the problem becomes a lot harder. So what we do is that we actually develop some of this solver to actually attack the problem, and much of the techniques is really focusing on nonlinear mixed integer programming, because we want to be able to tackle both the beam angles, designing of the dose volume constraints, as well as the order decisions that involve the 0-1 part. And we also want to be able to capture the nonlinear part of the dose discrepancy. So you will see that in the formulation. So basically that is the take home. It's really, we are going to look at the hard ones and see if we can solve it. So what are the input to this model? The basic model. So I won't go into detail on that, but the basic model itself is already very challenging. So we discretize the planning target volume and also the organs at risk and normal tissue of these, what is being given to us. We select a candidate beam angles. Now you notice we do have 360 degree freedom to select beam angles, but you won't be using all of them, because those beams that actually come in, if they intersect a critical structure, that means, for example, if you are treating head and neck, if these beams actually come in and go through the eye socket first before it hit the target, you eliminate those beams. Okay, so that's why it is fewer than 360 degrees. A lot of times it's about 100 beam angles that is the in the candidate beams. And then the size of the beam angles is the size is about like 15 by 15. So each of these beams, then, it has about 900 to 1600 beamlets. So that's the information about the beams. Then we have the prescription dose given by the clinician, the lower and upper bound of each of these organs. The homogeneity, that means the max over the mean of the dose in the tumor region. The coverage, how much you can actually cover the dose to the tumor. And the dose volume constraints and the physical beam orientation constraint. That means how many beams can you have? Like as I mentioned, the output beams usually range from 5 to 7 beams. And then there's the maximum isocenters used, gantry angles and couch angles and all these things that's in it. So the mixed integer programming approach works as the following. So we use the continuous variables to capture the dose discrepancy for each of the voxel. So voxel is just a unit of each of these discretization of the tumor region and all these organs. So we use a continuous variable to capture the discrepancy, and then we use an integer variable to capture where these dose volume is, and then we actually calculate the volume and put constraints on it. And I will show you an example of this constraint. In a beam profile, we use continuous variable to represent the intensity of the beamlet, and then we use 0-1 variable to represent the use of the beam directions, couch angles, energies, and collimator size. So here's the, there are just a few mathematics there, right, because I won't be able to go into detail. The mathematics part is actually very interesting and very challenging. So that's the BI to be 0-1 to represent the use and not use of beam I. And then there's the correspond to the beam I, that's the beamlet A, is that corresponds to the intensity of that beamlet. So if you look at that, then the total dose that is delivered to a voxel, just a unit of that, is just the sum of all these beams as well as the beamlets in each of these beams, right? So this is the representation of it. So, and then we use 0-1 variable to record if a voxel receives a certain dose bounce or not, and then we use all the 0-1 variables to indicate all the other deliverer parameters. Here's the model here. So if we look at it, this is the total dose that is deposited to the voxel, P, right? This is the dose that this voxel has to receive. For example, if we just focus on the tumor itself. So what you want is really ideally, you want this sum to be exactly the prescription dose, of course, but you're not going to get that, right? So you're going to capture, is it too much or too little? So you have this continuous variable to capture the discrepancy of this voxel from its target dose. And then if this is positive, that means it is underdose. If it is underdose, we want to control the percentage of underdose to be within 10%. If it is overdose, that's negative, then you want to control the dose difference to be 7%. So this is user specific. That means as a user, you can actually specify that. So now in this case, because I controlled underdose and overdose, that means I know precisely what is the homogeneity of this tumor dose, right? So I have 1.07 divided by 0.9. That is my homogeneity. So this is very powerful. This is exactly what the clinician wants. But as you can imagine, you create a lot of variables here to handle, right? You got a 0-1 variable. Now, if you want to have 95% of these voxels to receive at least the prescription dose, then you want to make sure that all these that satisfy the dose will be greater than 95%, right, of the chimerity of the total voxels of the PTV. So that gives you the coverage. So that's the, if we just look at PTV itself, the tumor region itself, so that's the part. So plus all the other things that we have to worry about. And then if we don't look at the complexity of the problem, you can say, okay, I want to minimize the difference of the, like, the deviations of these discrepancy from the prescription dose, right? I just put the least square stuff here. Now, that's the tumor, and that's already very big because a lot of the head and neck case, if you recall the picture that showed the 9 beams of the head and neck case, those are gigantic tumor area. And with these, this is in the order of 100,000 variables and 100,000 constraints. It's a huge one, just taking. Do we need all of them? Yes, unfortunately, we cannot skip them. Because in the clinical system, clinical system doesn't have any of these because they use the gradient method, the unconstrained optimization. And that's very rapid, but they cannot put in all these guarantees. So there are plans that come out that satisfy, for example, for some really hard tumor to treat, they will come back with a plan that covers only 70% of the tumor. And that's not good enough, and they keep reiterating that. So that's a little bit difficult to actually achieve. Now, let's look at the dose volume constraints. And you might have already looked at some of those yesterday, and I apologize if you have already seen that. But I'm just going to mention that. Basically, this is like, if it is the tumor you want, this is the cumulative volume, and this is the percent, the dose that it receives. So for the tumor, you want it to be going out like that and coming down totally vertical. That means it has 100% of them receive a sufficient amount of dose. For everything else, you want it to be as close to the vertical axis, close to the origin as possible. So in this case here, what it means is that 30% of these organs receive at least 50 gray. Okay, so that's that. Now, if I actually put all these put little points along this graph, then I can plot them and say, okay, now put this as a constraint. But all of us notice, if I give you several points along this curve, you can create thousands and infinite number of curves, right? They don't necessarily have to look exactly like that. But you have the, you really have the constraint here is that you cannot discretize it to the finite little thing. You can only select some points, but it's too expensive to represent them. So what we do is, here's the representation. This is the upper and lower bound, right, of that little voxel, how much it satisfies. That's okay. Everybody could model that as the, in the linear form. And then we want to capture this one. If it is less than 20%, we want to actually capture that and say, okay, this guy is going to be one if it satisfies just, if it is just 20% of it. If it is 50%, it captures that. And if it is 100%, like, well, that means it's really a very high dose here, it captures that. So this whole thing is just to say, okay, now tell me precisely, how much do you want for each of these volume to receive, right? So that's a pretty complex dose volume constraints, but it turns out to be very useful because you try to really push that dose to the critical structure as close to nothing as possible. So that's basically how these constraints. These are gigantic constraints, and the critical structures are also very big. For example, again, if you look at head and neck, and I'm thinking about head and neck cases because that is one of the really hardest area to treat, and because head and neck, everything around it is critical, right? And I suppose it, from the patient point of view, it is really true. If you look at the tumor, everything else outside is critical because we cannot treat the patient and damage critically some other organs. So let's look at the head and neck case here. So this is a hard case, and I show this one to you because this is actually a really big tumor here. And I have patients that actually, just last week, one of the patients actually had surgery remove part of the jaw totally because of the tumor is there. And in the big area, we have to actually irradiate in order to get rid of all the tumor cells. So this is the target. I mean, it's a little bit difficult to understand how big the tumor is. This is the tumor, primary tumor region. This is the secondary tumor region. All the other little guys, these are the parotid. these are the area where the saliva is actually produced. So a lot of patients, when you actually treat them with radiation, you actually cure the cancer, but then the patients have trouble with having no saliva. So that's a really critical organ that we have to protect. But how do we protect it when it is actually overlapping, right? So that's the really the critical part. So now this is really busy, but I suppose the mathematicians can absorb this very quickly. So the difference here, so because I can, I don't want to include too many pictures. So the idea is that this is the plan from the from our system, that is the solid line, and that's the plan from the clinic. The real plan from the clinic after 2 days is a dotted line. Now, as I mentioned, the this is a very difficult case, so they actually spend a lot of time in designing. So if you look at the solid line, it actually exceeds the dotted line. That means we actually deliver more dose to the tumor, which is good. Because if the patient, if the clinician has a way to do it, they will tell you, I just want to kill the tumor cells, absolutely everything of it. If you can actually increase the high dose, by all means do it, right? But the reason why we cannot do it is because by the time you actually put more dose to the tumor, you also put more dose to the normal critical structures, right? So now here, let's look at just a little thing here. So you can see these organs. This is the submandibular gland here, and this is the dotted line, and this is the solid line. You can see this one is actually a very critical, this is the right one, that's the one that intersects part of the tumor. So this is part of the those little gland that is important for the saliva, so it actually reduces a lot of the radiation. So basically, if you look at all the critical structures, you notice that the dose actually is really reduced, right? In terms of, like, for example, if you look at this one, it's lower, this one. Now, where does it go in terms of, like, the extra dose? Extra dose is going to show up, right? So you notice that this is the what we also give more dose to the secondary tumor here. So the plan is actually very good, and I will give you a few other results that give you the detail, but this is just the first step that I want to show you. Is what's happening. So this is the clinical plan, and with a very big, this is kind of like they chop up the, they totally block off that dose, so that's the shape of that colonnade to make sure that it doesn't really have too much access to it. But you can see if it is so much red, that means it's excess dose to the critical structures. So this is the MIP plan, so you can see very nice, nicely combined here, right? It's really quite beautiful. The plan. Now, there's a little dose here. Of course, it won't be acceptable. So, as it turns out, is that we actually do a re-optimization and then remove this high dose because it's critical not to have high dose outside the tumor. So, one of the observations that we find is that the clinical plan actually really is acceptable, the one that we actually obtained within 30 minutes. So of course, if you ask me how long does it take us at the beginning when we first started in 1999, so that's when we started IMRT treatment, it's so many years ago, I cannot believe it. It took us, I think, the first month when we actually tried to benchmark the first case. It's really just testing how the commercial system did, and you cannot really solve the LP relaxation in 10 days, even now, on a real case. The size is really difficult. So you can see the huge things is what we do is we actually build a system from scratch, solving the relaxation as well as the imagery program itself. So within 30 minutes, we get a very good pen. They are not optimal. Okay, if I'm going to have to really run after the optimal solution, it will take me a few more hours. Okay, so that's but the system is very powerful in terms of being able to get a very good pen. That's much, much better than the clinical one that is done by the commercial system. So it is very homogeneous. What the clinician noticed is that the radiation to the tumor is very homogeneous, and that it actually, the reduction to the critical structure is drastic. And you will see some of these in later slides. So it's actually one of the things that is very nice. It also gives them a tool to be able to investigate other types of clinical advances that they would otherwise not be able to do. So another thing is I mentioned about the beam angles. So at the moment in the clinic, what they do is that because they're only doing unconstrained optimization, they just focus on the fluence map. Somebody is selecting the beam angles a priori to the optimization itself. For our problem, we actually simply just optimize it. So what we do is that we notice that the angles are very different than what they select. Usually they select the angles that are equal distance, not because that is what they want, because that is what they can do, and they're used to that type. But they're very good in a sense, because if you sit in front of the system, you will not be able to really figure out, okay, equal distance, where do you select those beam angles, right? You have to have the experience of exactly what type of angle should be selected. So we gave them some angles that they would never imagine, but then they look at it and say, oh yeah, this is the right angle to select. Once you see it, like one of the kind of the cute things the clinician said, they cannot get the best plan, but when they see it, they know it. So they cannot really like articulate exactly what it is. The challenge here is really the optimization problem is really hard, very large scale. So now let's go to the next step. Of course, once you tell them you can actually get a better solution, then they tell you they want more, which is nice because naturally they are facing this problem in the clinic every day. So this one now, we are going to look at the uncertainties that is happening during the treatment itself. And I'm going to look at the uncertainty within a single fraction. You can also look at uncertainty across the fraction. That means when the patient comes in tomorrow, the setup errors and everything. And this is actually taken care of also within our model. So one of the things is really the uncertainty about exactly where are these voxels. Are they located in the tumor or in the normal tissue? Now, why is it so fussy? Because if you think about the lung as you breathe, right, the edges of these voxels, they become different type of voxels as you actually look at them. And the prostate is at the edge of the prostate and the bladder and the rectum. So you have to be very careful with those little areas. And they could be very big areas, and I will show you that in the liver. So the concept of internal target volume, I don't know whether David like mentioned about that. Internal target volume means that when you actually take a sequence of CT or MRI images during the breathing phase, that means instead of just take one shot of how it looks for each of the slides, you take the entire breathing phase, the patient in exactly the same angle, but that you are just letting them breathe. So if you actually look at that, and then you outline all the tumor over this entire breathing like CT scan, and you are going to take the union of these tumor regions. So that is what we call the ITV. Now, what you notice is what? Of course, because it covers everything, that means it is going to sacrifice some of the normal tissue, right, in some of the phases. So it actually seems to address some of the internal motion due to respiration and other causes. But the problem is that the normal tissue actually that is right at the edge of the tumor is receiving very high radiation, and it does not seem to be the best way to do it. And there's a lot of limitations that is documented. So the hypothesis here is that now one of the things that I learned is a little different from a mathematician point of view. Our hypothesis, or we have the conjecture and then we prove our conjecture. But in their case, they have hypothesis. Sometimes I don't quite understand what the hypothesis is in the biological sense. But this one would be Joe actually say, okay, the hypothesis is that we can actually develop plans so that we reduce the normal tissue dose and at the same time deposit more dose to the tumor and take care of the uncertainties. Okay, so we are pretty aggressive, right, in terms of wanting to say, this is what we can do. So can we do it? Let's take a look at it. So the purpose of this study now is to investigate the concept of robust planning. Or I would like the word to say unforgiving, forgiving, plans that are forgiving. That means if you actually move around, the plans is still good. Now, one of the things that's really important about the optimization part is that I know sometimes we like to prove unique existence and uniqueness, but you really don't want that in this case, right? What you want your solution to be is insensitive. That means if my data change a little bit, I want the solution to still be optimal, right? If your solution actually is so sensitive to the dose calculation, to the regions where the tumor is, then you are going to lose the ability to actually retain its superiority, right? So that's very important. So like robust is an interesting word and that we use in mathematics, but I would say it's really forgiving, plan that is very forgiving. So, and we are going to evaluate it based on the standard clinical significance that we evaluate a plan. So this is the idea. So now instead of actually taking CT scan like the traditional one, so that means when we actually do some of these CT scans is that you will have about like 100 slides of images. Now you're going to take it over the entire breathing phase. So that will have like a lot more multiple type of images. So that's the CT scan is what we call the 4D, taking into the organ motion into account of lung and liver. Now these two cases, these are the ones that are very sensitive to organ motion, and also these are extremely hard to actually treat. And lung cancer as we noticed, this is one of the most deadly cancer in the among the cancer group. And so the liver cancer, this type of cancer is on the rise, lung cancer. And liver cancer is very difficult to treat. The survival rate is only like 15%. So these are the very difficult cancer type to treat. So the method is that first we design the plan based on the static PTV. That means assuming the patient doesn't move at all, use the standard method that we are doing in the clinic. That's just the control because this is what they use in the clinic. The second one is to use ITV. That means you actually combine all the tumor region over the all the breathing phase and then use that to plan. And then we investigate two of these approaches called the underdose probability and the probability dose generation. So we're going to see if I can actually explain this in detail without putting too much mathematics to it. And then the idea is that we use the CERB, which is developed by Joe Deasy in Washington University, to generate different types of beam angles for each of these patients. So here's the underdose probability. So this is the gross tumor volume. Gross tumor volume means the tumor, this is exactly where the visible tumor is. And then there is the clinical tumor volume, is a little margin is written outside that. And then there's the planning volume, another margin. So the margin is important to include all the microscopic tumors. So the ITV is the union of all these CTV over the entire breathing. So this is how big it is. You can see like at one point, this is the tumor, and then once you union all of these are a lot bigger. Now you're going to look at these little voxels and look at what is the probability of this voxel at this phase that is inside the tumor or not outside the tumor, okay? And then your objective is to minimize the underdose to the tumor, okay? Based on the probability that it occurs inside the tumor or not. So that's, without putting a mathematics equation, I'm not very good with the writing equations in PowerPoint, and so I didn't stick these, equations from a PDF file. But the concept is really to say, like, you can see, say, for each of these boxes in each of these space, what is the probability that it's inside here or outside? Okay, so that actually is the, in the objective, we want to minimize the underdose probability. In the dual sense, is that we always like to think about, like, if this is what we do, we want to check all these boxes. In the dual sense, we're going to say, okay, I'm going to generate a dose for each of these voxels. But instead of generating the dose in such a way that it's static, I'm going to say that out of this entire phase, where is this particular voxel is? And I'm going to put a percentage of this voxel inside or outside the tumor, and then I put the dose correspond to that. And I sum up that. So then voxel dose, instead of just as a constant, it will be the sum of all these dose and the probability of this, each of these voxels along the entire breathing phase where it belongs. For example, if we just think about the breathing has three phases, and out of these three phases, two of the phase is inside. So you calculate the dose of that, multiply by 1/3, right, which is outside, and then you calculate the dose and multiply by 2/3. And you sum it up, that means this is the total dose received by this voxel over the entire period. I don't care if it is in phase one I receive less, or phase two I receive more, but the sum of it after I irradiate it is exactly what you want, right? So the cumulative dose. So it is the dual thing because it is inside the constraint, right? So this is kind of beautiful. That's the objective that's inside the constraint. And from the mathematical point of view, it's very beautiful. And it is something we did not try to design like that. As it turns out, it is a dual problem. And then we look at the two models. How do they compare? So they're not exactly the same in terms of, like, because one is in the constraint and one is inside the objective. So the model is a large-scale quadratic mixed integer program. So what do we include in the features? The coverage, we have to have that, the homogeneity of the PTV, and the underdose part, because we don't want to be too much underdose to the tumor. We include the upper and lower bound for each of the critical structures and the dose volume constraints. We force the number of beams allowed when it comes out of the optimal profile to be 7 beams. And then we use the tumor control probability and also the underdose. This is the underdose probability of one of the models to drive the solution. So here's the, I will look at two cases and just compare the result. So one of it, this is the lung tumor case, and 63% gray, 63 gray is being assigned to it, and we want 95% of the tumor area to receive that. And then there's the tumor underdose to be less than 10% of the prescription dose. Spinal cord has to be less than 45 gray, because higher than 45 gray, the patient will become paralyzed. So that's important too. This is the first, actually this is the first thing I learned 10 years ago. So they told me, yes, you can treat the patient, just do not make them like not functioning after you actually treat them. Because that's not only is bad for the patient, that's really like defeat the whole purpose, right? Because you do have conflicting goals, so you just cannot go that extreme. And then there's the volume of the lung. You want to make sure that you control the, this is the volume of the, 20% of the volume of the lung has to receive less than 10% of the dose, and then that's another. So the heart and esophagus has to receive as little dose as possible. Now part of the things is interesting is that the, because these tumors are actually very close to the heart and the esophagus, there has been study, actually just came out last spring, is that some patients actually pass away with cardiovascular problem after a few years, 5 or 10 years, and they couldn't figure out what exactly was the cause, and then they finally figured out what the cause was. It's because they had received radiation in the past and the lung, in the lung or the breast, and that the heart actually received a little bit too much of the radiation. But you don't kill the patient right away. It is a long process, right? So this is something that is very important. It's not like you just kill them right at this instant. You see the side effect, that's very severe, but these are like cumulative side effects that we have to avoid. So the observation, what we see is the following. Now remember, it's like we have the first is the control, that means the, what they are doing now, assuming the patient does not breathe or does not move, there's no movement, and then that's what we call the frozen PTV plan, and then there's the ITV plan, is the union of it, and then the two planning that we actually look at. So if you look at the frozen PTV plan, and you look at the patient actually continue to breathe, we actually look at like 91 to 96% coverage. Not so bad, right? And the minimum dose, okay, that is very bad. It's only 67%. Okay, so that's very low dose. What does that mean? That means the tumor may recur, right, in the near future. That's not what we want. So the, if you look at the ITV and the two concept of planning that we have, it covers 95% of it on across the entire breathing phase, which is good. And the minimum dose coverage is 97%. This is very good. This is more than what they asked for, right? They asked for 95% coverage, 95% dose. More dose is delivered to the PTV in the two that we actually have, the robust planning, than in the ITV, and I will show you that. So simply, we actually increase the dose to the tumor, and we improve the conformity. That means it's a lot tighter in our plan than the ITV plan. Now, you remember this one. It's ITV plan always deliver a lot more dose, right? Because it is a lot bigger. The margin is a lot bigger. So let's take a look. Well, this is really busy, but I don't know how to condense it into something that is like not so busy with a lot fewer lines. But phase one, so now you talk about the phase, the breathing of the patient. So phase one, this is the solid line corresponds to the ITV plan. The solid line corresponds to the probability dose generation plan, and then the dotted line is the underdose probability plan, and this is the ITV plan. So ITV plan, as you notice, is that in a lot of this case, I think it's really hard to see. Yeah, okay, here, let's just pick one. So this is the ITV plan, the dose, and then you see the solid line is lower. This is the critical structure. So what you want, again, you want the tumor region to cover as much as possible. In this case, if you look at phase six, it covers very, very nicely. But then as you see the breathing occurs, then you see that you can gain a lot in terms of using the robust planning that we have. And I will show you the number that's a little bit better. This like is a little bit easier to actually see. Is that I'm going to focus on esophagus and heart to see if we achieve. So this is the max maximum dose to the heart over the breathing phase. So you see it's a huge amount of dose that is deposited to the heart. And that's really, these are like the very deadly dose that we call it. Like you shoot it once for like a few seconds and you cause a lot of damage to the heart, to the esophagus here. So now the mean dose here is quite similar to this one, right? So there's not much gain in terms of using the probability dose generation. This is the one put it in the average dose in the constraint. But if you look at the max dose here, it's a lot less, right? So it's still a good. And then if you look at the underdose probability, this is the one that actually trying to minimize the underdose to the tumor and trying to constrain as much as possible. So this is a very nice, very, very little. Look at the mean dose. Huge difference, right, compared to the 8.7. If you look at the heart, similar things is that the mean dose is decreased compared to that 6.5, and then the max dose is a lot less, right? So these are the real numbers that you can see now. Let's see if I have that little picture. And then the right lung, now if I want to say what is the functioning of the lung after it's been treated, so the max dose is very nice, very low, and then the mean dose here, and then that's again, max dose is higher, and the mean dose. All right, finally, if this is a hard one to actually generate. This is the cumulative dose. That means now, instead of just looking at the dose on each of the phase, I sum it all up. That means I will look at each of the voxels over the breathing period. It's exactly what is the cumulative dose that they receive. So you see the esophagus here. This is the esophagus from the ITV, the union of all that, and this is the esophagus from the our plan here. So very nice result. And this is the heart, and this is our heart here. The underdose, right? So that's the two organs you can see very nicely. And then you see it's a little bit hard to see how much you actually gain in the, like increasing that. But then that's, again, it's not like the objective itself. So in terms of like, as long as we are not delivering less dose to them. So what is the observation? We are able to provide better coverage and improve the conformity as well as much, much better underdose in terms of like to the tumor. And compared to ITV, we have almost identical minimum PTV dose. That's good. And then we reduce the organs at this dose and of course the left lung normal tissue and the heart as well as the esophagus. So these are very critical organs. So what we notice is that with the two plans, what exactly do we see? Now these are important clinical stuff, and of course in the mathematical sense we might not think about, okay, exactly why do we care about that, but it's really clear is that if your goal is actually put that into practice, then you really want to make sure you actually achieve those. So basically like both of these actually reduce a lot, like for example the mean dose to esophagus is reduced by 70%. And this is really, our study actually came out exactly at the same time when other clinical study came out to say how important it is to reduce those, like the dose to some of these organs, the heart and the esophagus. So it is really a perfect match in terms of how we are actually going after that. Now where did the excess dose go? Some of them, they go to the spinal cord. They add just a little bit, like 0.1. And also 0.7 gray to the spinal cord, very little. The spinal cord here is very far from the tumor, so we are in pretty good shape. Now let's look at the liver case. So we actually did about 15 patients for each of these to understand better exactly if we actually achieving it across all these tumors or just by chance for one patient. So this is the liver case. This is from Harvard, the patient case. So the prescription dose is 35 gray, and then we want, again, 95% of the tumor to cover. And then, again, each of these tumor lower dose has to be constrained, and again, all these things. Now, liver is important. It's that you want to kill all the tumor cells, but you really want to retain the normal cells in the liver for functioning for the patients, okay? So again, comparison. This is a very interesting picture, and you will be shocked once you see the picture. If you don't take into account of these systematic uncertainties, if you just use the frozen PTV plan, it gives you 67% to 96% coverage as the patient breathes. But more alarmingly, it covers just 3%. It actually, at some point, it almost deposits nothing to the tumor. Okay, so that's very serious. That means you are not really helping the patient in terms of like killing all the cells. So all the other plans cover 95% and the minimum dose is 93%. So this is good because this is what we said in the model. So we again discovered that more dose is delivered to the PTV and then we have a very good conformity. So let's look at the picture here. So this one is the, I don't even include the frozen plan because the coverage is so poor that you don't really need to worry about that one. So basically this one is again is the you look at the differences between all these things and you see that we really put in more dose to the tumor. It's pretty clear in each of these one. And then again we actually reduce the dose to the critical structures. In this case it's the liver and the like some of the normal tissue. And the spinal cord is very quite far away, so we can put a little more dose to those regions. So here's the thing. This is the IPV1. This is the plan, and it is very nice. In terms of like very nice, but it's just a little bit rather. It's a little bit hard for you to see that because this picture is not as the color coded. So, but this one you see that it's higher dose, right? Inside the tumor, we actually deliver more dose using our plan. And this one again, you can see the red part. You cannot see the conformity one. Like you cannot see that it's being tightened. So this is what the ITV is. This is the liver. This is the big liver. Look at this cancer. It's like 1/3 of the liver. A very big patient thing. So basically, this is what we see in our study. Oops. So in terms of the liver study, is that we actually, again, were able to reduce the dose to normal liver tissue and reduce 10% of that. And then we also increase the dose to the tumor itself. So this is a really, and again, that's compensation. So one of the things that the doctors always say, if you just put the radiation in, the radiation itself, the sum of the radiation is a constant, right? So that is all that you have. So if you put more dose to the tumor, then you have less dose to the critical structure. So that's basically what we see. And on the critical, so in general, what we find is that these methods are very useful. We actually tested it on 15 lung cases and 15 liver cases, and we see uniform improvement over all these critical structures as well as increases in dose to the tumor. And really compared to the IPV, that means compared to like really making a big margin, we actually do much better in terms of conformity and reduction, drastic reduction to the critical structure. That's very important. So the summary is that in the lung case, we can actually really reduce drastically to the esophagus and the heart, and the liver case is to the normal liver as well as the other normal tissue. What is the challenge? So the challenge here is multiple folds. I'm not able to really give you the detail on the mathematical part, but I think you can appreciate the challenges. Even without uncertainties, the problem itself is really difficult. So the ones I illustrate, that is the head and neck case, it has, in the quadratic program, it has about 500,000 variables and 500,000 constraints. And if you put it down into the available QP software now, just to do QP relaxation, you cannot solve it. Because if you actually take it into the existing quadratic solver, the Chulasky factorization fails. Because these columns are dense columns. So none of the numerical linear algebra and all these subroutines that are designed, that is in the existing solver, actually can address that. So you really have to address these problems specifically. That means you really have to design software that address the mathematics part. And in some sense, the last part is the most important. Like this one is that you really have to work hard to push the mathematics part. And maybe it's good for mathematicians. But sometimes mathematicians always say, all right, this is a nice application, but it is the problem is so easy, you cannot publish anything in your own journal, right, to say, okay, I advanced the mathematical side. You can't do that. But for these type of problems, you don't have to worry about that. You've got lots to write in both sides, so you have a lot of advantage in that. So the last part is the most important one. It's really the gain in the tumor as well as the reduction, drastic reduction in the critical structure is very significant. I mean, this is not something to be ignored. So this is something that now you see the mathematics side, even though as much as we dive in to think about this is the beauty of the mathematics and I want to do something to it, but you really see a difference in terms of like exactly what the patient is receiving. So I think that's a very nice problem to work on. And I want to acknowledge my collaborators, Joe Deasy from Washington University, and also some of the work that I have worked on at Emory, and then the seed implants is mostly with Memorial Sloan, which is at Columbia and Cornell University, and also some of the funding agency. And there are some papers, there are a lot more papers in that, but if you're interested in some of these papers, I'll be happy to send you some of these copies. And that's it.